Hello and welcome to Sonnetcast, William Shakespeare's sonnets recited, revealed and relived. I am Sebastian Michael and this is Sonnet 77. Thy glass will show thee how thy beauties were, thy dial how thy precious minutes waste. The vacant leaves thy mind's imprint will bear, and of this book this learning mayst thou taste. The wrinkles which thy glass will truly show of mouthed graves will give thee memory. Thou by thy dial's shady stealth mayst know time's thievish progress to eternity. Look, what thy memory cannot contain, commit to these waste blanks, and thou shalt find those children nursed, delivered from thy brain, to take a new acquaintance of thy mind. These offices, so oft as thou wilt look, shall profit thee, and much enrich thy book. The curiously didactic Sonnet 77 marks the halfway point of the collection of 154 sonnets contained in the 1609 quarto edition, and it stands out for several reasons. What most immediately catches the eye is that it seems to be written into or so as to accompany a book of empty pages for its recipient to collect their thoughts and notes in a book of commonplaces, as would have been widely in use at the time. And owing to its tone, it does pose the question whether it is in fact addressed to the same young man as the other sonnets in this large group known as the Fair Youth Sonnets, and if it is, whether it finds itself sequentially in the right place. In a moment we shall examine these questions, but first of all, let's have a look at what Sonnet 77 actually means. Thy glass will show thee how thy beauties were. The sonnet talks to the recipient about an unspecified time in the future and says, your mirror will show you how your beauty will wear off or wear out over time. Editors note that in the quarto edition, the word wear is spelt W-E-R-E, as in were, and speculate whether an additional meaning is intended of the mirror prompting the young man to reflect on what his beauties were once upon a time. This cannot be entirely ruled out, but it strikes me as comparatively unlikely. Spelling in Shakespeare's day is haphazard for many different reasons, which we discussed a bit in the introduction. So here, perhaps unusually, I am inclined to accept the common emendation to wear without seeking any further layering. Thy dial, how thy precious minutes waste, and your clock, or here, standing in for the clock, more specifically your sundial, will show you how your precious minutes waste away as time passes. And the reason the timepiece here referred to is most likely a sundial, if but for metaphorical or symbolic purposes, is that further down in the sonnet, its progression is described as a shady stealth, which suggests the shadow of a gnomon creeping across the dial. The vacant leaves thy mind's imprint will bear, and of this book this learning mayst thou taste. The empty pages, vacant leaves of a notebook, will carry your thoughts, your mind's imprint, and from this book here, which I give you now, a book that you yourself will fill with your collected quotes and notes and thoughts, you may then sample or savour or enjoy the following learning. Now, while it is all but obvious that the second of these two lines refers to a book that William Shakespeare is either writing this sonnet into, perhaps on the first page as a dedication, or that he appends his sonnet to as an accompanying note or letter. What is not entirely clear is whether the vacant leaves of the first of these two lines refers to the blank pages in this particular book, or to the blank pages that an educated young person would ordinarily use to take notes generally. Both are possible. Let us assume for the time being that this sonnet too is addressed to Shakespeare's young lover, even though this happens to be one of very few sonnets in the Fair Youth series that could in fact have been written for somebody completely different, and we shall look into this possibility shortly. And so Shakespeare is either saying to this young man that his notebooks will be the keepers of his thoughts quite generally, and that what follows is now specific to this particular book of empty pages, or he is anticipating the introduction of the gift that follows immediately after. The difference, as you can see, is comparatively minor and does not alter the overall meaning of the sonnet. The wrinkles which thy glass will truly show of mouthed graves will give thee memory. Here we now would expect Shakespeare to spell out the learning that this particular book can convey, but in fact he recapitulates what he's already told his reader, albeit here in quite unusual terms. The wrinkles on your face, which your mirror will show you truthfully or honestly in years to come, will remind you of gaping graves and thus of your own mortality. It is a stark image, this, the mouthed graves, and there is no obvious explanation as to what prompts this in Shakespeare at this particular juncture. Thou by thy dial's shady stealth mayst know time's thievish progress to eternity, and by the stealthy advance of your dial you will see and understand the continuous progression of time towards eternity. The idea that time is a thief of beauty, of riches, ultimately of life, is fairly commonplace in itself, and we also are familiar with the notion of time creeping or moving stealthily, meaning unnoticed, like a thief in the night. Look, what thy memory cannot contain, commit to these waste blanks, and thou shalt find. Whatever you cannot keep in your memory, commit it to these blank pages by writing it down, and you will find. The quarto edition here, incidentally, has waste black. But that does not make any sense at all, and so the emendation to blanks, which corresponds to the vacant leaves earlier, is generally accepted as valid. Those children nursed, delivered from thy brain, to take a new acquaintance of thy mind. You will find that these notes and thoughts that you are consigning to your book are like children which, by being kept and looked after there, outside of your brain, are being nursed until, at some point in the future, they can make a new acquaintance of your mind, meaning you can retrieve them and newly understand and work with them as they will have matured with time, reflection, and education, much in the way you yourself will have matured by the same means. These offices, so oft as thou wilt look, shall profit thee and much enrich thy book. These caring duties, the keeping and nursing of thoughts in your notebook, will then benefit you every time you look at them, and they will greatly enrich and improve your own writing. The use of the word offices strongly alludes to religious practice. In the context of the Christian Church, Oxford Languages defines offices as the series of services of prayers and psalms said or chanted daily by Catholic priests, members of religious orders, and other clergy. Shakespeare would no doubt have been aware of this, and he appears to infuse his counsel here with a spiritual, even moral, purpose. Colin Burrough, in the Oxford edition of the Sonnets, credits the 18th century Shakespeare commentator George Stevens with first suggesting that this sonnet was written to accompany a notebook, and it is an attractive conclusion that makes sense, drawn from the line, "And of this book this learning mayst thou taste," which clearly appears to refer to the book the reader holds in their hand at that moment. It is also possible, but seems signally less likely, that either A, Shakespeare means that book, referring to the vacant leaves in a notebook the reader is expected to use generally, or B, that he in fact wrote that book, but the typesetter made a mistake or erroneously corrected him. But these two considerations, in view of the convincing probability of the Stevens theory, do appear purely academic, and I am noting them here mostly to signal that, as in almost everything concerning these sonnets, we are still talking about degrees of likelihood rather than absolute certainties. Assuming then that this is so, and that the sonnet does accompany a gift, the two most obvious questions to pursue are, 1. Who is this gift for? Is it our young man, or could this be a sonnet that has slipped into the collection, even though it is actually addressed to somebody completely different? And 2. What's the occasion? What prompts Shakespeare to give this person such a book, together with a specially composed sonnet? And the two are, of course, connected, with the latter perhaps being the more trivial one, since there are any number of reasons that offer themselves, contingent somewhat on how we are inclined to answer the first of these two questions. Two indicators point at a recipient that matches our young man. The first one comes in the first line with, "Thy glass will show thee how thy beauties wear," which suggests that the person who is receiving this sonnet has beauties, for which in our language read beauty, to start with. This, we can be confident in stating, entirely applies to the fair youth. The second lies in the gesture itself and the tone. Handing a notebook to someone together with instructions on how to use it is something that one would do to a young person, and we know for certain that the fair youth is a young man. But this second match also casts our first and principal doubt. Why is William Shakespeare this far into what is clearly a pretty grown-up relationship with his young lover that has gone through admiration, desire, separation, betrayal, forgiveness, enjoined bliss, talking to him as if he were practically a child? It's not impossible. Lovers do infantilize their darlings. The 20th century has taken this to some extreme that lingers today, with people still calling each other babe or baby. But that's not quite the same thing. This sonnet in its entirety sounds like something a grown-up would write for a very young person, someone who is receiving their first book of commonplaces, not someone who is entirely familiar with the concept. Which, incidentally, would then favour the notion that the vacant leaves and this book in the first quatrain are one and the same. Now, one of the chief candidates for the fair youth, Henry Wriothesley, 3rd Earl of Southampton, and I emphasise here, as I have done before, that I will, of course, dedicate a special episode to the question of who the fair youth might be, because it may or may not be him, but he, Henry Wriothesley, turns 21 on the 6th of October 1594. This might be an appropriate occasion for a poet to give his lover a notebook together with a sonnet, and he could be forgiven for making that sonnet sound like he's writing to a 10-year-old. William Shakespeare's son Hamlet was baptized together with his twin sister Judith on the 2nd February 1585, and thus would have turned 9 at the beginning of 1594. This would be approximately just about the age at which in England you moved from lower school to middle school, and it is entirely possible, though it has to be said pure speculation on my part, that a poet and playwright father might want to gift his son a commonplace book with a paternally phrased piece of advice on how this will be useful for him in his life. Shakespeare would have had no reason at the time to expect that he would lose his son just 2 years later, when he, Hamlet, is aged 11. Whoever the recipient is, what the poem does do, in any case, is assume that he will in one capacity or another be writing. This is not an unreasonable assumption to make for any educated boy or man of the era, and it goes hand in hand with the assumption that an educated boy or man of the era would have and make use of a book of commonplaces. This dates back to the classical tradition in ancient Greece and Rome, rekindled in the Renaissance, where from an early age boys would maintain notebooks into which they would write commonplaces, tropes, sayings, quotes, snippets of dialogue, proverbs, poems, as well as their own thoughts and reflections, to build a treasury of arguments, turns of phrase, and other rhetorical devices that they could use in their own writing. That they would need writing skills, even if they were not setting out to become professional poets, was taken as read, since every man of note would have to be able to write correspondence, speeches, and quite likely love poems to help them woo their future betrothed or to charm their lover. Girls and young women, by and large, in Shakespeare's day, did not receive an education, with some notable exceptions, most prominent among them the Queen herself, who was schooled to a high level in private and continued to learn all her life. We are not now, nor are we ever likely to be, in a position to answer the questions this poem poses. It is worth asking them because, as you will be aware if you've been following this podcast, some people question the validity of the assumption that the vast majority of these first 126 sonnets are written to one young man. In the last episode, I made a strong case, or certainly I strongly argued the case, for this being so. Here we meet the, to my mind, first genuinely plausible exception. Sonnet 77 could really have been written for someone else. It doesn't have to be. It fully lies within the scope that would be acceptable and applicable to the young man. But its content and the tone in which it conveys this content make it as fully compatible with the recipient being somebody else, someone who has nothing whatever to do with Shakespeare's lover, somebody most likely, if that were the case, quite a bit younger still. There is also, of course, the possibility that Sonnet 77 was composed for the young lover, but much earlier in the relationship, before they even were lovers, perhaps around the time of the procreation sonnets. Those are, as we saw and noted with interest, not poems that sound like they're addressed to a lover either. They too are teacherly and in the main driven by a purpose other than to communicate attraction, desire, or let alone lust. Though even there we found a couple of exceptions when we looked at sonnets 15 and 16, you may recall. Or if you weren't with me, then you can, of course, at any time listen to these episodes. They are available wherever you find this episode of the podcast. One further thought offers itself, and it is no less intriguing to entertain than the others. Sonnet 77 is the last sonnet before the entrance, with increasing fanfare of the rival poet. Because starting with Sonnet 78, William Shakespeare becomes preoccupied, so as not to say obsessed, with the presence in their relationship of another poet, who he believes, and we have good reason to believe for good reason, is usurping his place not only in the mind, but also in the heart, and quite possibly with the body too, of the young man. And if it is the case, as we ventured it might be, that the young man is by now getting just a tad bored with the poetry his older lover is composing for him, then receiving a notebook with a doggerel that might best suit a child could just drive the nail into the coffin of passion. And that would place this poem right where we find it, bang at the key plot point of an unintended three-act drama of not only passion, but also power and possession. And very soon we will find out how this pans out with the rival poet. Before then, I will record a halfway point episode, a half-time break where we can take a breather and look back at what has happened so far, and also, of course, look forward and prepare a bit for what is about to come. And today, before I go, I have to make an apology, and also I want to make a pre-announcement, an announcement of an announcement to come, as it were, and they are as follows. The last episode went out a bit hastily, I was slightly under time pressure, and so I uploaded a version that contained an error. I then spotted the error and corrected this, but if you download your episode, or if you listen to your episodes as soon as they appear, then you may have been listening to the flawed version, which contained the error. And if you spotted it, then well done. It's not entirely obvious, but it was there. I missed out an entire couple of lines and the translation portion that appertained to these couple of lines. And so this only applies if you listened to or downloaded the last episode, the episode for Sonnet 76, between the time when it was published, which was on Sunday evening, London time, and when I uploaded the corrected version, which I did at noon, approximately Monday, lunchtime in London, UK. So this would be about 8 a.m. New York, 5 a.m. LA, or 5:30 p.m. in Mumbai. Or if you're listening in Australia, in Sydney, for example, then it would have been at 11 o'clock at night on the Monday. This just to say that if you are among those who did so and you want to listen to the corrected version, it is now uploaded and available like all the others. And the pre-announcement I want to make is about an event I have mentioned once very briefly before, but I've now decided to go ahead with this, and details will appear on the website very soon. The website is at sonnetcast.com, and the event I'm talking about is a half sonnethon. I'm going to do a half sonnethon, which means that I will recite from memory the first 77 sonnets. That's all the sonnets we have discussed so far. I will recite them all from memory in one go without interruptions at a hybrid live webcast event. And when is this going to happen? This is going to happen, of course, on William Shakespeare's birthday, which we traditionally celebrate on the 23rd of April. We can't be sure that he actually was born then, but it is a convenient date to celebrate him because it's also St. George's Day, and it's also the date of his death 52 years later. So, on Shakespeare Day, 23rd of April 2024, at 7:30 p.m. London time, That will be in the middle of the afternoon in New York, 3:30 p.m. and lunchtime, just late lunchtime in LA, 1:30, and 1 o'clock in the morning of the following Wednesday, of the 24th, in Mumbai, and 6:30 in the morning in Sydney. Sorry, Sydney. Sorry, my friends in Australia. Although that might actually be quite convenient for some of you if you get up early to go to work. Then that's when this will happen, and it will be a live event in London, so you can come to this. I will announce where exactly this is going to happen, and it will of course be webcast, and it will be in aid of charity, and I will make the details known very shortly, so stay tuned. If you want to receive an email about this, if you want to actually be actively informed, then sign up to the email list at sonnetcast.com. There's a link there. And of course, there's also a donate button to Sonnetcast itself, to me, if you want to support me in making this podcast. I continue to be extremely grateful to all of you for your support and for listening to my podcast, which is, after all, what makes this project worthwhile. And so I do hope you will join me again here on Sonnetcast, where we recite, reveal, and relive the sonnets of William Shakespeare.